This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk.
All of this stuff that we're talking about, I think, is what happens when you go on this alcohol-free journey. Like, it's bugger all to do with alcohol at the end of the day. When you go on this journey, you remove the alcohol, but it all becomes about just peeling back the layers. And I heard someone describe it as being like, I went from living unconsciously to living consciously. And I really like that, because I feel like I was living with my eyes closed. And then when I removed alcohol, my eyes became open and I became curious about myself. I became curious about the world around me, and I became invested in doing things in a different way.
After months of to-ing and fro-ing, we have finally made it work. It was due to time zones. It'll all become apparent. This week's guest on the podcast is the fabulous Sarah Rusbach. Originally from Manchester, lives in Australia, but currently back in Manchester for reasons that you'll find out during the course of this chat. I'm just so glad we finally got to make it happen. Sarah's got so much to share with you during the course of this episode. We talk about resilience. We talk about grief. We talk about midlife. We talk about perimenopause and menopause. We talk about Sarah's community, her book, Beyond Booze, and how her life has changed over the last 6 years. It's a cracking listen. I'll stop talking. Let's get into this week's episode.
Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, I'm Laura from North Wales. I've been sober curious for a few years as my drinking was creeping in more and more and just becoming too much of a bad habit. I'd tried to moderate, but that just seemed to cause too much stress, so I decided to take a break. I found the OTI podcast in my first week and I loved it. Ben and Shaz just seemed so normal and down to earth, and had fun with the guests and sang about the joys of sobriety, that I just thought I'd really give alcohol-free life a proper go. So I binged the back catalogue in the first 3 months, and then I bravely took the plunge and joined the community, which was a bit nerve-wracking, but it definitely was the best thing I've ever done. The community is really supportive and welcoming, and the Zooms are a total game changer, and it's just nice making new friendships with like-minded people. It's definitely worth its weight in gold. I'm now nearly 8 months alcohol free, and I can honestly say I don't think I'd have got this far without OTI. So if you're sober curious or thinking about going alcohol free, I'd highly recommend giving OTI a go, because you've got nothing to lose and everything to gain. So just give it a try.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to this week's episode of Over the Influence. It's fabulous to have you listening. We're dead chuffed that finally, after many, many, many years, we are chatting to today's guest. Hold that thought for just a sec, and we'll try and keep this intro short and concise, because last week's was an absolute debacle. My name is Sharon Hartley, based in Lancashire. This year I will be 7 years alcohol free. It's ace, it's dead good, best thing I ever did, only slight regret. But it's all part of the journey, I suppose, isn't it? Is that I didn't do it sooner. I drank too much, too quickly, and far too often. I'm now 51 years of age, and I never thought I'd be entering my 50s, like, sober and just absolutely loving it. Of course, I don't do it on my own. Ben Anderson, how are you?
Hi, fine, thank you. I'm Ben, I'm 36, I live in Liverpool. I'm going to be 5 years alcohol-free in the summer. And you know what? I'm actually quite excited about that. Like, I think because the sun's actually been out. You know, it's been a few months of freezing cold in Liverpool, but the sun's actually been out and it's made me start thinking about the summer. And, you know, I kind of like marked 2, 3, 4 years with, like, you know, I wasn't that nice. I feel like I'm going to do something for five. Like, it feels like a big number, 5 years.
It is a big number.
Alcohol free. But I removed alcohol for 3 months. That was the plan. Three turned into six. Six turned into 12. And on day 366, I went, this is a good choice for me. And I've been alcohol free. 5 years in July. It's July the 6th, I think. I need to double check that. But I wasn't an everyday drinker. I was a binge drinker. I'm a bit of an all or nothing person with everything. There's good things and bad things that come with that. But for me, You know, I couldn't pick and choose the bits I liked from alcohol-free life and pick and choose the bits I liked from drinking life. You know, I had to make a choice. And for me, being alcohol-free was absolutely the right one.
And you know what? It suits you. Suits you. It looks good on you, this whole sobriety, Ben.
Yeah, back at you.
You will. Thanks, love. Thanks, love. Right, enough of all that jazz. Let's get into this week's episode. It gives us great pleasure to welcome Sarah Rusbach to Over the Influence. Sarah is originally from Manchester. She lives in Australia, currently back in Manchester, hence why we've been able to make this work. It's been a long time coming. Sarah, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing?
I'm so good. Thank you so much for being here and having me here. And thank you. It's so nice to hear that we're all in up in the north as well. My absolute home and where my heart belongs is in Manchester. And my family are currently in the car on the motorway to Liverpool to go and see Liverpool play Newcastle United as we speak.
Yes.
And so, we are Liverpool fans as well.
Well, before we get into the chat about, well, everything, wherever this conversation takes us, we never really have a plan, Sarah. Just give us a bit of an intro as to who you are and what you do.
So I'm based in Perth in Western Australia, and I lead a community of women who are looking to live their best lives alcohol free. When I got sober, I could see that there was all these amazing communities in the UK and all these people doing amazing stuff. And there was nothing like that really in Australia. And so I decided to set that up and create a community for people who wanted to go on an alcohol-free journey. I trained to become a grey area drinking coach. I trained with Jolene Park in America. And so I've been doing that since January 2021. So I've supported thousands and thousands, mostly midlife women, to change their relationship with alcohol. I had my book come out last year. And I've also just become a menopause coach, because a lot of the women I work with are also find they're in the midst of perimenopause, and the hangovers were actually disguising many of their symptoms. And then they discover, oh shit, I've actually got all of this other stuff going on. So I can really offer that whole holistic package for women as they're aging who remove alcohol and want to live their best life and feel their best.
You are ticking so many boxes there. I mean, Ben, I don't know where to start with this.
I feel like you should start, though, rather than me jumping in at this point.
What, are you suggesting that I'm a middle-aged woman that's losing me marbles in perimenopause?
Absolutely not. And I'm stepping back from the microphone. Over to you.
You know what, Sarah? Yeah, that about sums it up, I think, for me. A middle-aged woman losing her marbles in perimenopause, but one that actually happens to be alcohol-free. I look back, so I started my AF journey when I was 44. Had I not, I don't know where I'd be today, because as you say, that drinking, the hangovers, the anxiety, the feelings masks everything, doesn't it? Remove it and you know what you're dealing with. I don't know where to start. Carry on, Sarah. Tell us more.
Yeah. And I was the same. I got sober when I was 43, and I'm just like, holy shit, how would I have dealt with any of this? Because this is enough as it is without throwing in hangovers and alcohol and all of the other stuff on top. So I take my hat off to any woman that can still drink a bottle of wine most nights of the week and navigate perimenopause and actually feel okay. I think most of them have just got wearing very good masks, and behind them they must be losing their marbles, because it's a tough enough time to go through with all those hormone fluctuations without throwing in the impact of alcohol. So I, first of all, will help people to remove the alcohol and take that out and start off with a break from booze to see how they feel, and then take them on a journey to work out, you know, nutrition, lifestyle, sleep, managing stress. What are they doing in their lives that brings them joy, that makes them happy? And that was, you know, why I also wrote my book, was because there's lots of amazing books out there of memoirs and books around how to get sober, but very few books that were going, how do I create a life I love so much I don't need to drink? And that was what went to me writing Beyond Booze. So it's the most fulfilling work I've ever done. Every single day I pinch myself that I get to call this my job, that I get to show up and support so many people and wake up to messages from women all over the world saying they've read my book, they've done my program, their life has changed beyond recognition. And every single day I just come back to being so freaking grateful for the decision I made to stop drinking.
Okay, so let's rewind to the age of 43. I was 44. I've got a feeling, Sarah, that a lot of our stories, they're going to resonate with each other. I think we may have been living like a parallel life. Why did you stop? What was life like for you as a drinker?
So it's funny, isn't it? The stuff that you learn about yourself in hindsight when you do the work on yourself when you quit drinking. And I started drinking at 14. In the north of Manchester, down the local park, drinking soda stream bottles filled up with Cinzano and Southern Comfort, a bit of Malibu, a bit of martini, add a bit of Coca-Cola, mixed it all together, drink it, have a snog with the boy from the local park, go home, vomit, and do it all again the following weekend. And that's
standard Saturday.
Now tell me that you were doing the same, Sharon.
Cinzano, snogging in the park, throwing up, all quite disgusting, actually. Yeah.
I'm home now and I drove past that park today and I had a little smile to myself.
I was like, that's really
where I snubbed that boy and I like threw up in the bushes afterwards. What I realised in hindsight is at the age of 14, I had moved school 5 times. My dad had led to us, you know, we'd moved around a lot and I didn't really ever feel like I fitted in. And I was always trying to get people to like me. I was always trying to suss people out quickly. How would I be included? How could I get in with all the cool girls and all of that? And alcohol was the first time drinking with those girls in that park. It was like, and then you start getting the positive feedback. You're so fun when you're drunk. You're hilarious when you're drunk. So then you create this story in your head of, that's how I get people to like me. That's the version of Sarah that everyone really likes. And so that became the version that I presented to the world on quite a regular basis, it turns out. So drinking continued, the party scene in Manchester, a bit of dabbling with the clubbing scene and music and all of that. Moved to London. My first job was in recruitment, where the fourth stage of the interview process was doing shots of Sambuca to see how well you could handle your booze before they decided if they would give you the job.
Look, actually, no, stop. That actually happened.
It's not legal. You can't do that.
It was 1987, right?
Oh, my God.
One of my things about is alcohol and work. I just don't understand why anyone thinks that ever mixes. Like, we talk about this a lot around Christmas and Christmas parties. It's like, right, you've got to come to the Christmas party. You're expected to drink, but only the perfect amount. Because if you drink too much and embarrass yourselves or embarrass the company, that's bad. But you have got to drink. But the perfect, it's just nuts. That's it, just those, you know, you unplug yourself from the matrix and looking back in, workplace drinking culture is one that I just don't understand at all. Just bonkers. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah. So that was like, this was called a drink up, the fourth stage of the interview process. And I passed with flying colours, obviously, and joined the team. And then we would do drink ups for other people. And we would choose not to hire people because they didn't get pissed enough at their drink up, or they like couldn't handle their booze enough or whatever. Like, this was the 90s in London, right? It was a very different time. But so drinking continued. Drinking was what I did. It was my badge of honor. I had huge capacity. I prided myself on that and very little negative. Moved to Australia in 2010, had 2 children in very quick succession. And all sorts of stuff was going on in terms of, I'm on the other side of the world. I'm a mum. I've left my career behind. I've left my family behind. I've left my friends behind. I've moved to a city where I don't really know anyone. I'm pureeing vegetables, cleaning up baby sick and going to monkey music. And that's my life. And this is really freaking hard. And that's when alcohol became something that wasn't just about socializing and was something that made bad feelings go away. So that was, and also that's, you know, this fell into mummy wine culture. This was when big alcohol were really honing in on young mums, you deserve your wine, you know. And again, I didn't think anything of it. I liked a wine. I was never so pissed I couldn't do anything. I was never throwing up the next day. Like, all of those things were just how it was. But gradually, you know, you get into your late 30s, you get into 40, you start noticing little things that happen when you drink, or I was blacking out more. I couldn't remember more. I was having more anxiety. I'd never had anxiety in my life. I went to my doctor and I said to her, I'm a shell of the woman I used to be. I feel like I'm overthinking everything. I've lost my confidence. I'm very sad all the time. And at no point did she say to me, how much are you drinking? or even ask anything about alcohol, just happily gave me a prescription for SSRIs and sent me on my way to get on with life. And I didn't take those tablets. I decided, I had a couple of very, very boozy nights. One night I fell over, face planted on a concrete driveway, cut my nose open, cut my lip open, like very bad at like face plant, and got taken home and put to bed. And I woke up the next morning to my 5-year-old daughter standing by my bed saying, "Mummy, what happened to your face?" And you know, when you just have that moment, it's like someone's just punched you in the stomach, and your memory of the night before and the shame that you feel and the self-disgust and the self-loathing. And I just hated myself. I hated the fact that I once again was the one that had got so drunk. I once again was the one who'd fallen over, who had to be taken home, who couldn't just go and have a couple of drinks. And so I decided I'll do a 21-day detox, because they say it takes 21 days to break a bad habit. And I just thought, I've got a bad habit. And this was 2017. So this was before there was, you know, the groups or the books, or there was Annie Grace's book. And I read Annie Grace's book and that was it. So I did my 21 days and I was like, far out. Oh my God, this is how it feels to wake up with energy. This is how it feels to wake up and not hate yourself. This is how it feels to be able to look at yourself in the mirror in the morning. This is what it feels to wake up happy. And I didn't realize that alcohol had been impacting that, because it was never big enough. I wasn't vomiting. I wasn't in bed. I wasn't hungover, but it had been slowly eroding my soul, my light inside of me. It had just been slowly, slowly dimming, but it's so insidious. You don't notice it happening until I took that break. So I kept going because I was like, I've got to do more of this. And I got to 100 days and I was like, this is amazing. But hey, I can't never drink again. That would be really weird. It's fine. I'm now clearly not an alcoholic because I've just done 100 days off. So everything is fine. I'll just go and be a normal drinker now. So I remember going out and having a glass of wine with my husband. I mean, like, look at me. I can go out and just have one glass of wine now. I am totally just a normal grown up. And within 2 weeks, I was back to drinking the same amount as before, because that's how it works. And so 2 years of backwards and forwards, backwards and forwards. And then March 2019, I set the date. I had just a hangover, a terrible time. I knew I wasn't ready to stop. And I set the date for April 2019 after my friend's 40th. Went to that 40th, intending to go out with a bang and get absolutely wrecked. Had two drinks, went home, and was just ready to start the rest of my life. And that was my last drink.
Isn't it amazing how resilient humans are in many ways? I'm just thinking, going back to you as a drinker, and also, you know, that kind of, oh, I'm stressed at work, it must be that. Oh, I've not been sleeping great recently, it must be that. Perimenopause, must be that. You know, you find everything else to blame, don't you, for not feeling great before you get to the alcohol. Why do we do that, Sarah, as a society?
Because, well, for a number of reasons. Number one, we don't want to believe that we have to get rid of that, because for many of us, that's the one place that we turn to for joy and fun. And that's where we've built that association. Number two, society tells us that that's the only way to have joy and fun and good times and connection and laugh and all the rest of it. So you've got the cultural aspect, you've got the marketing from big alcohol telling us that's the way to have fun, you've got the peer pressure from other people. But also for many of us, I think that any period of time we've taken off booze, we may have seen it as a punishment. We may have done a dry January and gone, oh God, I better do dry January, I've got to do it. And we just tick off the days and see it as something to endure, as opposed to looking for the positives.
You talked about this before, Shaz, haven't you? And the thing I mean about how resilient a human is that, you know, when I was drinking, I wasn't drinking every day, but like the amount of times I dragged myself into work and still be able to do it and still function. I mean, you know, having to put a lot more effort into it with doing it with a hangover, but I drag myself through days sometimes. And you get to the end of that day, you go, how did I get through it? But you just do, don't you?
Well, you accept it, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. And you start to forget, this is just who I am. This is how I'm getting older.
Yeah.
So obviously this is how I'm going to feel now.
You accept it, and because you're feeling rotten, you'll have another drink. And you're in this circle and this spiral. And coming back to what Sarah said, Ben, about taking that break, I've yet to meet a single person, like genuinely, unless it was for medical reasons, that has become fully sober and enjoying, not just having an alcohol-free life, thriving, loving an alcohol-free life. I've yet to meet a single person that set out on day one going, that's me done, I've finished. You took a break, Sarah. Ben took a break. I took a break with every intention of getting right back on it. Maybe as a little bit more of a grown-up, you know, exactly what you said. But I, even now to this day, I feel a little bit ranty, but I'm just going to spill it out there. I did not have a clue how amazing sobriety would be. If you'd have told me as a drinker, I'd have laughed in your face and said, bore off, I am not interested. Even now, 6.5 years in, it still gets better. The surprises still come. And it sounds so wanky. It is like this complete awakening of what life is really supposed to be and who you are supposed to be. But whilst you are drinking, in that period as well, where it's slowly but surely eroding your light, dimming your light, eroding your soul, when you are in the thick of it, you don't know until you know. And it's really hard, isn't it, to sort of say to somebody, look, it's going to be good. It's going to be really good. But I think that is where it's really difficult, especially with, you know, you talk to a lot of women, Sarah, stuck in that middle-aged rut of maybe daily drinking, maybe binge drinking, whatever. I don't really know where I'm going with this. I just want to say that it's ace. It's good. Yeah. But it's so complicated as well.
It is. I did a poll in my group and I asked women why they drink. And my group is, there's 20,000 women aged mostly between 40 and 60. And there were three reasons: boredom, stress, and loneliness. And so we have a generation of midlife women who are bored, stressed, and lonely. And so they drink because none of those are emotions that are comfortable to sit with. And quite often they take a huge amount of intentional effort to change. And sometimes we don't even know where to go to change. And so we just drink.
So let's pick up on that.
Sorry,
then.
Chaz. No, just go on, to quickly Ben, jump you go, in here. I think we should, you know, give a shout out for what we all do. Because actually, if bored, stressed, and lonely, by joining a community, like the Over the Influence community, for example, you're suddenly connecting with people, you got stuff to do, and you've removed alcohol, so stress levels naturally will drop. Like, it isn't it funny that's bored, stressed, and lonely? Well, actually, one thing can solve that.
Yeah. Totally.
What were you going to say, Shaz? I jumped in.
Exactly that. You took away my point then, Ben. You had it already. Mm-hmm. No, I was going to say exactly that. The boredom, stress, and loneliness. Stop drinking, or at least take that break in the beginning. And every one of those points, all those three things begin to change, don't they?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, because most women are drinking because of stress, but they don't realize that alcohol physiologically raises your cortisol levels and makes you feel more stressed. And so actually the quickest thing that the women realize when they do my program is how much their anxiety has reduced and how much calmer they feel, when in fact they were drinking to relieve the stress. But in stopping drinking, they've relieved the stress.
How's things at the moment, Sarah? Because obviously you're alcohol-free. You have been now for a very long time. Is it 6 years, you said, this year?
Yeah, so it'll be 6 years in April.
Five for me, six for you, seven for Shaz. Like that. Just those little things make me happy. And obviously, you know, you've got a lot of alcohol-free time under your belt. We've talked about how alcohol-free life is joyful and provides connection, reduces stress, etc., etc. But life is still life and tough stuff happens. Are you happy to talk about where you are at the moment and how you are at the moment and why you're back here in the UK?
So, absolutely. So on the 21st of January, I got a call from the UK, which was at 2 a.m. UK time. So if you're in Australia and it's the middle of the day and your phone is ringing from your sister-in-law at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know it's not a good call. She's not a drinker, so she wasn't phoning for a midnight chat when she was pissed. And so I saw that. And you know when your heart sinks, and her and my brother were driving back from the hospital, having had a late night call that my dad had been taken ill and he passed away a few hours later. And this was a complete shock. We hadn't seen this coming. So, and it, you know, that there was the shock of it. That it's not just the grief of losing a parent, it's also the shock of not even being prepared for it. And then it's the processing of, but I didn't get to tell him this, and I didn't get to hold his hand one last time, and I didn't get to tell him that I love him, and I didn't get to say thank you. And so there was so much that came up, as you can imagine. And so many people said to me, oh God, I bet you wish you could have a drink. Are you going to have a drink? And I was like, that's the last thing on my mind, is having a drink right now. Like, no, I am not. It didn't even occur to me. There was not a single part of me that wanted to escape myself. I was there for all of it. And I held myself through a process that was difficult and will continue to be difficult for time to come. But because I've done so much work on myself in sobriety, I've done a lot around emotional regulation. I've done a lot around how to sit with uncomfortable feelings. It was like all of that work was the lead up to this, and being able to allow the emotions to come. And if I was still drinking, there's not a chance I could have done any of that. I just would have drank away my feelings. And that would have meant that the processing of this would be so much longer and would come back and bite me on the ass a million times in the future. But what I have been and will continue to go through now is healthy processing of emotions that are completely appropriate for what I've been through. And so the gift of being able to surrender, you know, I had days I couldn't get out of bed. I had days where all I could do was say goodbye to the kids as they went to school. And I just stayed in bed and cried and cried and cried. And that was a healthy thing that I needed to do. But if I was still drinking, I wouldn't have been able to do that. I would have put a face on. I was great at wearing a mask. I was great at pretending everything was fine when it wasn't. But sobriety has allowed me to become who I actually am and to show my emotions and to say to my husband, I'm really struggling. I can't do anything. I need a really big hug. And then I need you to fuck off and leave me alone so that I can just stay in bed and cry for a bit. And just the gift of knowing myself on that level of what I need is something I will forever be grateful for.
Thank you for sharing that, Sarah. We talked a bit about grief and sobriety last week with our guest, Annalise. She lost her mom last year. It's very different, but I just want to give you an example from my life since the last time that we saw each other, because I think the last time that me and you had a conversation, it must be 3, maybe even 4 years ago now.
I think so.
Well, since then, I've become a dad, which was the best thing ever. We've got 2 stepkids, Alfie and Millie, but now baby Leo's here. And you're talking about, you know, grief and shock as well. It's very different. I mean, we have had some brilliant counselling actually through Older Hay. And one of the things I've learned about what happened with Leo's diagnosis when he was born is that actually we went through a very different, but it's almost, you know, almost grief in the sense of Leo was born with Down syndrome, which we didn't know during the pregnancy. It was quite a shock when we got that phone call at the time, and they kind of talked us through. It's almost like grieving in the sense of you're grieving that you're not going to live and he's not going to have the life that you thought that he would, and that your life is going to be different as a result. So it's very, very different situations, but kind of similar feelings. And the shock was definitely there for us. there was, and you know, I look back quite ashamed in a way now, actually, that I carried such sadness at the time. He's a lovely boy and he's thriving, he's doing brilliantly. Shaz saw him at the weekend and he's just full of cuddles and kisses, and you know, he's a gorgeous boy. I think the point I'm getting to is that I always worried that, you know, alcohol-free life, this is a good choice for me. I'm doing the right thing. I'm, you know, better relationships, thriving over here, more energy for this, da-da-da. But what happens when life throws me that thing? You know, that bad thing comes along, because life's life. You know, will I have that get to the pub response? Sorry, Shaz, I know we're not swearing as much anymore.
It felt like an appropriate one.
And, you know, but it just didn't happen. And that thing that I'd feared for ages since becoming alcohol free, I would have been what, 2.5, 3 years alcohol free when, yeah, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, something like that, born. Yeah.
Like the thing I'd feared, it was amazing how it was the complete opposite. And it wasn't, I need to get to the pub. It was, I need to be alcohol free. I need to be here for Jem, for Leo. You know, my son's here now. You know, I need to be present and more available than ever. I need to have this clear head, because we're processing all this stuff right now. And actually, it was I will never, ever forget that feeling of how it just solidified my decision rather than put it into question. It's really lovely to hear you speak about that.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? When you know how much you've grown as a human, because like alcohol doesn't make your problems go away. In the moment, it stops you feeling, but then the next day you've got to feel it a hell of a lot more, and then that drives more drinking. And so to be able to be in a process where you can allow your emotions, because your emotions are what you're feeling. They are appropriate and healthy in response to something that is happening to you. But so often we've been taught that uncomfortable emotions are to be suppressed, to be hidden, that a man shouldn't cry, a girl shouldn't scream and shout and get angry, like whatever the story has been. But we are to give ourselves permission to feel how we feel, and to support ourselves through that is the greatest gift we can give ourselves, and then the greatest gift that we can role model to our kids.
And what you said about, I'm going back to bed and I need you to leave, and I'm going to cry all day. That's okay. It's okay to do that. You know, I think the thing that really does upset me is when that doesn't happen for people, when actually the uncomfortableness, the confrontational nature of bad things does have the opposite effect and go, right, well, you know, I'm going to escape. I wish that in that moment, there's just that kind of just press pause. You know, just give yourself 24 more hours alcohol free. You know, see if you still feel that way tomorrow. You know, but I think you're right. It's important that we talk about it. It's important we say it's okay to feel crap. It's okay to close the door for a bit. It's okay to do whatever you need to do in this moment. Please just try and do it alcohol free, because you'll just reap the benefits of doing that. Even in really difficult, testing, horrible situations, you will be grateful for remaining alcohol free when you look back on this period.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, it's nice to see you again, Sarah. God, we always have good conversations, don't we? Chaz, sorry, I've stolen the mic.
No, don't apologise.
I made it all about me.
Not at all.
So, Sarah,
I've really enjoyed listening to you both. Anything you share about Leo, I would listen for hours, Ben. Honestly, absolutely, I would.
Yeah.
And Sarah, thank you.
Chaz?
Well, I know, and I did see him on Saturday, and he's so cute. He's got hair like Ben, Sarah.
He's
got a proper good thatch, really good thatch of hair. Sarah, thank you for sharing so honestly as well. And the one thing that I'm picking up from both of you talking about, you know, shock and grief and dealing with really big life stuff, you know, in capital letters, is that you will get through it and you will get to the other side. And actually, once you've done that, you've like recharged your superpowers again, haven't you? To carry on, and then whatever is around that corner that's going to come in whenever, for any of us, you know you can deal with really shit stuff.
Yeah, and that's what I talk about so much in the coaching that I do, is how do we build resilience? Because the problem with alcohol is it just robs us of any resilience because we've never actually had to sit with hard stuff because we avoid it whenever hard stuff happens. And, you know, building resilience is something that it doesn't happen overnight. And so it's all those little moments of when I want a drink and I don't have one, you're building resilience. When you're feeling uncomfortable about something and you're going, oh, I feel really angry because that person said that thing that's really, I don't agree with what they've said or whatever. It's just being able to label your emotion, understand why you feel that way. Like, that's healthy emotional processing. That's how we start to build resilience. But I read somewhere once that they say that people, when we stop drinking, we have the emotional age that we were when we started drinking, because in that whole period of drinking, we've not built resilience because we've simply
numbed.
So you've got loads of 50-year-olds walking around in 40, you know, in 50-year-old bodies, but they're actually 14 at heart.
I can't take that. That is one of the most powerful things I've ever heard. That just hit me in the stomach.
How old are you, Shaz?
Well, as, like Sarah, like I dabbled in my teens, and I can remember I had the Cinzano, the Martini, and I remember there was one glorious occasion in the sand dunes at Blackpool. Again, I think I went on to snog somebody, but anyway, and I was holding my nose and I was pouring a can of special brew down my throat. It was 9%, and it tasted like ass. That it was just the worst drink in the world. But as teenagers, we were like, oh, look, it's strong, we'll drink it. But that was just dabbling, that was just messing. I suppose I did start drinking properly more regularly, 17, 18, 19, you know, that sort of age, like late teens when
I was your mid-20s then, if you had your alcohol 3 years on. You're currently mid-20s, Sharon.
Is that what
I'm 21.
Yes, yeah. I love it. I absolutely love that.
21 again.
You don't look it, Ben. 5 years of OTI has sorted that out for you. Oh, that is brilliant. That is amazing. Go on, Ben, jump in.
The building resilience thing, it's talking about that, it's reminded me of something that really, really helped me out with, I read Alan Carr's books years ago. I think it was the Give Up Smoking one, actually, I read. And there was something that really resonated. And it was about cravings. Because when you're talking about resilience there, you know, it's almost like a reframing, isn't it? Get to the end of every day, I've done it again. And yeah, you know what? I've had a few moments today where I thought, I really want that pint that I saw that bloke drinking, or I could really do with. But actually, you get to the end of the day, and that's, you know, just do one day at a time. Every day your head hits the pillow and you haven't had a drink, then if you achieve nothing else that day, then you've achieved that. And that's huge. It's that same idea, you know, the idea of a craving, and from, you know, it would have been nicotine. That actually, when that kind of, when you've got that really strong nicotine craving, reframe it, and kind of, and that's a good thing, because that little monster inside you, as Alan Carr kind of likes to, you know, what's it called when you not symbolize, but you kind of manifest this, you know, imagine this little monster, this nicotine monster's inside you. And when the craving's really, really strong, it's actually a really good thing, because it's going, it's shouting louder. It's going, give me nicotine, because you've done that long without it and you're doing that well. That's why it's screaming so loud. And it's that, so I like that kind of idea of, yes, you might be got to the end of the day, you might feel crap, but actually it's another day where you've built that resilience. I love that, Sarah. I really like that.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, emotional maturity, all of this stuff that we're talking about, I think is what happens when you go on this alcohol-free journey. Like, it's bugger all to do with alcohol at the end of the day. When you go on this journey, you remove the alcohol, but it all becomes about just peeling back the layers. And I heard someone describe it as being like, I went from living unconsciously to living consciously. And I really like that, because I feel like I was living with my eyes closed. And then when I removed alcohol, my eyes became open and I became curious about myself. I became curious about the world around me, and I became invested in doing things in a different way. But when we stay stuck in our patterns of drinking and doing what we've always done, I don't think that we can grow. I don't think you can ever really, truly be the person that you are, because you don't know the person that you are. And removing alcohol has allowed me, and I know so many others and yourselves, I'm sure as well, to start to discover, well, who am I? What do I love doing? What pisses me off? What do I stand up for? What lights my fire? What's my passion? Actually, maybe I'm not the extrovert I thought I was. I actually like time on my own as well. And I'm actually more spiritual than I thought. And I'm a morning person and I didn't know that. And all this stuff that we just start to discover about ourselves, that some people will never, ever know that about themselves. They will get to the end of their life and never actually know who they were. Not because they're drinking all the time, but their eyes have been closed and they haven't been curious enough to actually explore who they are. And you know, if anything that's happened with Dad over the last few weeks, it is, you don't know what is around the corner, and live your life true to who you are and what matters to you. And when I ask people, you know, when you think of moments that you feel the happiest in your life, where are you? What are you doing? And most people will say a form of being in nature with the people they love or with animals they love. Like, it's the most simple of things.
I was on a cliff. Right.
Sometimes
over
dogs
the
come above
the
children.
Family.
That's okay.
That's so funny. I'm so stereotypical. I was like, oh, where am I? Oh, I'm on a cliff overlooking the ocean, and Jem and the kids are there. I'm such a stereotype.
I was on a beach in Barbados, actually, with the family as well. Yeah. Fancy.
But don't you, like, this is the whole thing is, like, at the end of the day, all that matters when we get to the end of our life, all that matters is that we've had time doing things we love with the people we love. And that is all that matters. And we overcomplicate everything in our lives, right? And just coming back to that, and sobriety has given me the gift to be able to reprioritize what's important and not have to live for the 2-week holiday once a year or the big events that you look forward to, but find the moments in every single day that make me happy.
Okay, then let's flip it on you, Sarah. When are you at your happiest?
At the beach with husband, kids and dog, or having a roast dinner on a Sunday night and then playing a game of cards. It's so simple. It's with the family, laughing, joking, taking the piss out of each other, eating good food, swimming in the ocean.
It's
nothing more, and we overcomplicate it. And most of the time, the things that bring us the most joy and make us the most happy are completely free. Well, not Shazza. She had to go to Barbados, but for the rest of us.
Listen, a little bit extra, Sarah. Can't help it.
But, you know, like, it's free, but we forget about it because no one's selling you that. There's no one can make money from you having a beautiful family moment, climbing a mountain or going down the beach. So we forget about the things that are right under our nose all along. And I feel like in sobriety, we start going, God, the birds are chirping and it's morning and there's blue sky.
Don't even start me.
Happiness.
You've just reminded me of one of the most joyous moments I had in the car on Friday night, right? And it's so simple. And it was my youngest, he's 16. Mum, will you take me to this party? And you're like, yes, son, I can, because I'm sober and I can drive any time of day. So, you know, that always sticks with me. But we got in the car, just me and him, and he put on his, attached his phone to my stereo so we could blast out the music. And we put on Snoop Dogg really loud. And we were both just dropping like it's hard, popping like it's hard. And it was the best, don't laugh, it was the best 20 minutes that I'd had in such a long time. It was just glorious. And in that moment, you know, dropped him off, you know, stay safe, be good, don't come back too late and all the rest of it. I drove home thinking that was just brilliant. And none of it would have happened if I'd have still been drinking on a Friday night. Like, literally. I'm a secret Snoop Dogg fan. And I don't know if you knew that.
I had you down as a lot of things. A Snoop Dogg fan was not one of them. That would have been so far down the list.
Because I can pop it like it's hot, you see.
No doubt. Do not argue with a menopausal woman.
Yeah, no, don't. Just don't.
That's what you've told me.
Just don't.
Do you have dry balls? Is that still a thing for you, by the way? Quickly, just kind of going back to the
menopause.
Because, Sarah, when Shaz first started talking about this on the podcast, very openly, very bravely. It's awesome. And how many messages have you had from people saying, like, thanks so much for talking about that? But you were reading out the list of symptoms that you took to your GP.
Yeah.
And there were so many. And then when it got down to dry balls,
I got dry eyeballs.
Yeah. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, that's been solved. I think it was since I changed my HRT. So I started on tablets and then I went to patches and now I'm on the gel. I no longer have the dry eyeballs that we shortened, Sarah, to dry balls.
Dry balls, yeah.
Other problems in other areas, but...
Yeah.
We're getting there, Sarah. Oh, man. What an episode. I've so enjoyed this chat today. It's just, it's gone in all sorts of directions. Ben, what would you like to ask before we wrap up?
I think very simply, Sarah, it's been fabulous to speak to you. We've covered a lot of things in not a lot of time, which is a skill of yours, I have to say, definitely not ours. But we want to give the book a lovely big plug. So you've mentioned it, but can you give us the big sell?
So the book is Beyond Booze, How to Create a Life You Love Alcohol Free. And like I said at the start, it's a book really going into the different areas of sobriety and how to create that long-term life, not how to get sober, but how to stay sober. So I've had lots of men actually tell me how much they've got from it. So while I wrote the book for women, there's a lot of men who've messaged me. There's a whole section on stress, on managing your emotions. There's a section on how to have fun in sobriety. There's a chapter on sober sex, on relationships. Like, lots of women in my community have not had sex with their partners sober for many, many years. And that can be really daunting and really quite terrifying. And how do you get your mojo back and or sober dating if you find yourself single and you're going out and what, are you happy dating someone who's drinking or do you not want to? So there's a whole section on sober friendships and how to navigate that if all your friends are still massive pissheads and how do you still maintain that close connection? So I really wanted to cover the big important themes that came up for me so much in that first year, but in navigating them, I was able to go on to create a life I love alcohol free and just really felt like all the tools and resources that I had used could be shared in a book. And so there's resources sections, there's in every chapter there's a check-in section to complete, to tick off, to experiment with, to try new things. And so I really hope that my hope for everyone reading it is that it comes away as something that they can refer back to time and time again with so many tools, so many resources, so many action steps that they can use no matter where they are in their sober journey.
And just tell us about your community as well, Sarah, give that a mention.
The Women's Wellbeing Collective. So it's, I guess because I'm British, there is a mix. It's probably half British, half Australian. So we have a lot of fun with time zones. And but we have a lot of...
Tell us about it.
Don't even go there.
Admin Ange does that for us now. We couldn't do it.
It took us 4 years to book this podcast, Ben. That's where we're at.
And in Australia, when it comes... And you go, okay, I understand that America has got different time zones. Okay, then it's an hour change. And then I'm going to go to Australia. And what, they change by half an hour? Why do they change by half an hour?
So wrong when you walk across a road and there's a half an hour time difference.
What's going on there? Yeah.
So that's the Women's Wellbeing Collective, which is a free Facebook community. And then I run women's alcohol-free challenges. I run a group coaching program called Rediscovering Me, which is all around who am I as a woman who doesn't drink anymore. And then I'm just about to launch my Thrive After 40 wellbeing program, which is all around nutrition and increasing energy, supplements and everything that really helps women as they go through perimenopause.
Amazing.
Did you know that Shaz is an author now?
I know.
Well, Sarah, her book came out in January and she said that she will never, ever write another book ever again.
Is there
a second book coming from you, Sarah? Did you have a friend that you felt very comfortable moaning at throughout the process of writing the book as it was edited and re-edited by other people?
Listen, you got a free copy, didn't you? In fact, you got a couple, so shut up.
I did, yeah. And I'm always here for you, Sharon.
Thank you, Ben.
The highs
and
the lows.
I'd be lost without you.
I was dog walking with my friend the other day and I said, so I've been thinking about the next book. And she went, can we just stop for a second and remember the 6 a.m. dog walks where you cried, where I literally had to drag you along the street, where you told me to remind you that you are never writing another book.
Thank you, I like this.
And remember.
Okay. And can I remind you how this impacted my life as your friend?
Exactly. But no, I do think there will be another book, but not for a long time. I'm still traumatised by the last one. So yeah.
Well, listen, if it takes 4 years, it'll take us that long to book another podcast, so it'll all work exactly. out in the end.
It'll
Sarah,
it'll
be absolutely fine. It's been an absolute pleasure. I am sorry it's taken us this long to finally chat and over the influence, but I'm so glad that we've made it happen. Thank you for being brilliant and for sharing so honestly, and thank you for joining us and over the influence.
Thank you, and thank you so much for having me and sharing your, when you came in and talked to my community, it was one of the greatest talks. They all loved you and adored you, and so yeah, it's just so wonderful to connect with like-minded people, and I've absolutely loved talking to both of you today.